Hello, everybody, and welcome to Weekly Manga Recap here on February 25th, 2015. I'm Iroller of Time here alongside Rollo T. Chris, what's it doing?
It's doing, Nick. It's doing up, it's doing down, it's doing all over the place.
Awesome.
I don't know what doing is in this situation.
I have a confession, neither do I.
Okay, well, that's good. Then we're on a good track.
I just know that it is doing.
Well, that's good. I'm glad that it is presently doing. That means it's not stagnant. It's moving in a direction. It doesn't always have to be forward. It could sometimes be backwards. It could be side to side. But as long as you're moving,
are we describing a Wonka Vader?
You know what? I was trying to think of like life and the paths we all take and like depression. But yeah, Wonka Vader actually sounds a lot more amusing and just
I'm not nearly as like introspective a place as you are right now. It would seem.
No, I'm just battling the depression, Nick, and I just want to turn every analogy into it. That's how I live my life every day. Come home, look at the dog. She's pooped on the floor. I'm like, isn't that just a sign of what life's all about? Come home and the dog's pooped on the... It's actually no analogy. You're just a bad dog. Now I'm upset.
Fuck you, dog.
Yeah, my goddamn it, dog. But then I love her because she's Scotia. So it all works itself out.
See, if I came home and a dog had pooped on the floor, I'd just like, why do people like these things again?
Because, I don't know. They're like...
Whatever you're going to say, you're wrong.
I was
going
to say, well, I mean, you have a cat you actually like. Like, I'm looking at my loud, annoying cat who, at some point during this podcast, you're going to hear snoring because it's just what this cat does.
Yeah, well, I also have a dog that I don't like, so...
Oh, like, as if on cue, my dog starts barking, too.
See? Yeah.
But it's cute. Scotia's got cute barks.
No, it's not. It's annoying.
All right, well, I can't win them all.
People with like silent non-noise making it like ha 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 ha. Pitting my turtle.
Turtle. Can't love a turtle.
Yes, you can.
I don't think so. Turtle's never gonna show you affection.
Well, not in a way that you can like understand. Because it's a reptile, you know? They don't not as closely related as, you know, other mammals are.
Anyway, I suppose so.
Not a completely 100% domesticated species, so there's that too.
Can I put wacky hats on it?
Yes.
Alright, well, I guess
very, very small hats.
Well, that's what makes it more adorable. I always thought, weird anecdote here, but I suppose that's how Weekly Manga Recap always begins.
It is.
Do you ever play Wind Waker?
I might have played a demo once, but...
This reference might be lost on you, but at one point in the game, you get, like, a little traveling companion that's, like, I don't know what the fuck they were. They're, like, little tree people with, like, leaves for masks. And, like, there's one that follows you around, and he's, like, maybe a foot big with, like, these little tiny little fucking legs. And, like, every time he moves, it, like, jingles around. Like, he makes, like, a jingle sound. And I always thought, like, the only way for this to be more perfect is if you put little tiny socks on him. I was adamant in that, and I still to this day maintain, I'm like, if you put little tiny
socks in the re-release?
I'm like, if you just put little tiny socks on them, he'd be the most adorable thing in the world. So.
Yeah, no one like it thinks that about fucking Navi. Just like, God.
No, I mean, you imagine, like, lighting or fire or whatever, but I feel like Navi got a bum rap, you know? What's she supposed to do?
I'm pretty sure she got exactly what she deserved. That sounds very dark, doesn't it?
I was
context of Navi.
You're just like, I'm glad that bitch died at the end. Fuck you, Navi. I totally planned to open this episode talking about Whiplash and like interesting like philosophical movies, and it just never came up. We talked about socks and animals.
I didn't watch any of the Oscars.
But I was disappointed this year because I had only seen, going into the Oscars, one movie nominated for Best Picture, which was Grand Budapest Hotel, which I didn't even see in theaters. I just rented it in a Redbox like six months later.
I thought it was good.
It was good, but I was like upset that I didn't see more, so I rented Whiplash, which is an interesting movie. It's good, but it has a weird end to it.
Anyway.
I had more to say, but we're already having a long episode, so let's...
Yeah, I guess fortunately for us, we both need a little bit more time to read M0, so that'll be next week. Meantime, we've got another Jumpstart series to do, and we are at basically maximum capacity with weekly series, and we're going to remain at that capacity for next week, too. But let's just get into it. We're going to start off, as we usually do alphabetically, we're going to do a Black Clover. Page Two, that still annoys me. It's going to annoy me until it goes away, basically. The Magic Knight's Entrance Exam. Amazingly, this is about the Magic Knight's Entrance Exam. Basically,
are we going back to that idea that when we're in Black Clover, people just talk excessively until they just devolve into gibberish? It goes for the titles too. Magic Knight's Entrance.
So we cut ahead to 6 months after the first chapter ended, with both Asta and promising to both aim to become the Wizard King and stuff. I don't know why that much time needed to pass. It seems kind of early in the series for a time skip. Did they do anything in that time? So, basically, we get a bit more information on what the Magic Knights are. They're this organization of 9 squads of mages that specialize in battle, that work directly under the command of the Wizard King. They risk their lives to protect the kingdom and are admired by the entire nation. Okay. They're elite wizard knight guys. So as people come into the exam venue, they're like, oh, what are these? They're anti-birds. And the less magic power you have, the more that they peck at you. This, of course, is so that when Asta shows up, he's like sworn by them. They're all ripping apart his face. And it's actually...
What a fucking arbitrary creature. Like, why does this exist? These birds flock around people with less magic.
Yeah, it's...
Like, why do you have them here, then? Just to piss people off before they take the exam? Like, God, I'm fucking covered in these birds. Thanks, Magic Tournament, for raising my confidence.
It's nice to know that, the same idea that made The Birds one of the most infamous horror films of all time is played for a joke. Yeah, birds pecking at my face. Isn't it wacky? Ooh-doo-doo.
It's because I have no magic. The birds are taunting me. Nature is condemning me already. And they're going to chase him as he screams and tries to run away.
So we're introduced to this guy who is there to conduct the exams. He is Yami Sukehiro, and there's also a couple of other guys there, like Nazi Mime Guy.
Nazi Mime Guy?
Look at the guy. He's got, like, this horrifying dark uniform, but he's also got, like, pale skin and black lips and eyeshadow and stuff.
I guess I could see Nazi Mime from that. I just got, like, kind of eccentric. I don't know why. I guess I was thinking, like, The Cure or something like that. Like, kind of one of those, like, emo bands.
I guess.
So that's where my thought went to. But I heard it described earlier as like some cross-dresser. I was like, I don't know where you get that from. You're seeing him from the neck up. At what point do you think he's cross-dressing?
He just wears makeup. That doesn't mean he's necessarily wearing feminine clothing.
Yeah.
Anyway, so then we're introduced to... Oh, it's William Vengeance. Not Vengeance, Vengeance. Whatever. He's like, oh... He is the top candidate to be the next Wizard King. He is an eventual rival for Asta, And they summon a bunch of broomsticks, and are like, okay, again, the broomsticks. If you have, a basic amount of magical power, then you'd be able to float on it. And so, is showing off by, surfing on his, basically. A bunch of the guys are doing fine, but if you were like, oh, I can't take off, and if you were like, oh, I can't control it, and Asta is just kind of... I don't know, that is a very unfortunate image, I think. Arms trembling, gripping the wooden shaft between his legs with a grimace of concentration, but he just can't do anything with it,
Does this character ever not, is that his static face is just I suck.
So they're like, oh, he's totally not going to make the cover.
I love characters in this world.
So some douchebag named Seke,
I just realized now this isn't supposed to be the super handsome guy that was with the fire dude earlier. I just now realized. Alright, this makes more sense.
So he says, like, oh, it's okay, don't worry about it. No, nice to meet you. He's being nice to ask them, hanging out around him and stuff, but he's in private, he's just saying to himself, I look a lot better being compared to a pathetic bottom dweller like you. Meanwhile, Asa's going...
Alright.
It's the sound effect that's right there.
I know, it's just, it's like four straight panels.
So they go through various tests, and, you know, they try and, you know, hit targets with magic, and Asta can't do anything. And Sek is showing off, and he's looking all awesome next to Asta. And eventually they're like, alright, it's the final test, and you will engage in actual combat, so find someone to pair up with and fight him or her. You may use your grimoire, I'm sure you've mastered one or two attack magics, right? And so Asta's like, oh no, all I've done in the exam so far is yell. Yes, that is correct. So Sek is like, oh, you can be my opponent, Asta. And says, oh, you want to fight me? That's nice. And everyone's like, oh, that asshole chose the weakest guy here. That's not fair. And Asta, as they're preparing, is like, alright, let's do our best, you know, fight with no reservations and may the best man win. And Seg's like, you know, you're just a filthy little rat who doesn't belong here, so maybe you should just, you know, not even bother trying. Go back to the boonies and continue your sad, pathetic dump of a life. Like, well, I guess he's just like, yeah, I couldn't hold this in for, you know, five more minutes. I had to be a douchebag now rather than afterward.
I had to give you the motivation to overcome me now, because waiting two more minutes to be passable to you was just too much.
Oh, God.
He's like, oh, man. Have you ever, like... It's kind of like when you haven't masturbated in a really long time, you get that sexual build-up.
You mean
build
like
up.
This?
Exactly, like that. Stop doing that, though. There are children here. It's like that, but for not being an asshole. It was just building up inside of me, and I just... I angry cummed all over your face.
Oh, God.
Here's my Magna Ball.
My ejaculanger. So, he's like, oh, come get me, Asta. Har, har. It's really weird to see that spelled out. And he summons some special magic.
What kind of voice do you think he has if he has a laugh that goes har, har? Like, I kind of imagine him as, like, being, like, a pretty boy, something like that. Like, come and get me. Har, har. Like, I can't, that laugh doesn't fit him. Like, I almost imagine him being,
pretty,
like,
pretty stereotypical pretty boy voice, so we go, like,
or yeah. I hear har, har, and I immediately go to Nelson, just like, come and get me! Ha, ha! And I'm just like, that doesn't really fit this dude.
So, he uses some special thing called Sick Magic Magnum Cannonball, rather. And he's like, oh, my magical powers are bronzified and protect me as they shoot out magic bullets. It's defense and offense all in one. I'm going to block the heck out of your weak attacks and show the captains how good I am at defense. Then once you're tired, I'll crush you. And they're like, oh, man, and that other guy, can he even use magic? Can't believe he's here. Some lowly peasant.
You know that thing we did last chapter where we showed off how no one believes in him and at the last moment he proved everybody wrong? We're doing it again 6 months later.
Oh, yeah. So Zach's like, come on, don't hold back. I'm ready for it. And that's like, okay, here I go. Pulls out his sword, rushes in, cleaves through the shield, and bashes him into the fucking ground.
I'm glad his sword isn't sharp, I guess, because he's still in one piece. I guess it's like a blunt sword. Because if that was a blade, he definitely have just murdered that guy.
So Zach's shield is completely cleaved in half, and he's bashed into the ground. And Asta's like, I'm not here just to join the Magic Knights and have a blast without putting in any effort. I'm here to work my butt off and become the Wizard King. And everyone's like, ooh, interesting. And Yuna's like, Asta, the one who's going to beat you is me.
God, Yuna was like the most boring fucking person on the planet. Holy shit, has this dude done anything besides be like, I'm really good, but I like Asta because he's a cool dude? Like, it's like his two character thoughts. He just repeats on loop.
It almost seems like this should have been the end of the first chapter instead of its own chapter or something like that.
Somewhat. The thing I will give it, though, is that Black Clover has probably been the best of the jump starts in terms of pacing. Mm-hmm. even in going into some of the past ones we've done, because it's, you know, it did its first chapter to kind of set up the premise, but then its second chapter just jumped immediately into, here's the world, you know, here's the premise of it, and let's get into some fights, let's kind of move things along. Whereas most of the other jump starts we've seen, they kind of repeat themselves, or they've been kind of slowing down for the second chapter. Like, Kagami Gami had an entire chapter just dedicated to the two characters interacting. So, I kind of actually appreciate...
Only now are they actually doing, like, now let's go, like, start the plot up and stuff.
Yeah, I kind of appreciate the fact that, you know, this one jumped right into just doing something. And it seems...
Food Wars was like that when it started up, too. The first chapter was introducing Soma and the feel of the series and stuff, and the second chapter was just him going to the academy and trying in. And it continued that in the third chapter and so on.
Yeah, I think it's the best way to do it, is just to kind of push things forward rather quickly. You don't have a lot of time to make an impact on your audience, so I think it's the best way to kind of go about it. I, from what I've kind of been hearing, this seems to be the series most people are excited for in this lineup. I mean, we haven't seen, I don't know, generic fighting dude, what's it called, series that's still yet to come out next week. But of the three we've seen thus far, this definitely seems like the one to me that has the most potential. Not necessarily the one I like the most, but I feel like this series has a better grasp on what it's trying to do, so I feel like...
It's also a safe option, yeah. Basically.
I feel like if anything's going to survive from this lineup, it's probably going to be Black Clover, and at that point, you know, I guess we'll see from there if it stays in the magazine. I'm kind of hoping it doesn't, not because I have any ill will towards it, but we already have a jam-packed jump right now, so I'd be completely fine if it's not in the magazine, but...
Oh, good, we're going to talk about another battle series.
But if it is, I definitely have high hopes that this series will progress in a better direction. Because not that there's anything wrong with it right now, it's just the lead's boring. And well, actually, the lead's not boring, he's just not likable.
He's annoying.
He's just an annoying asshole. And then the rival is ungodly boring. But what are you going to do?
Well, we'll find out if it gets better, basically, I guess. Mm-hmm. So let's go into Bleach. 616 Mimi Hagi, a.k.a., as multiple people have pointed out to me, and I got the feeling as well, Avatar Season 1 finale. So, of course, Reo is still dead, and so Jubog's like, oh, you, no power can be used to resurrect Reo, because Rihime is useless. People in the real world are still... who are sensitive to spirit energy, I guess, are like, oh my god, there's still tremors and stuff, and why isn't anyone reporting the earthquake? It's just still going on. In the Soul Society, members of the Vendrag are like, what's going on? Oh, this must be His Majesty's will. He will crush us along with the Soul Society. The Soul Society, the Living World, and even Hueco-Mundo. Are they all going to disappear? And meanwhile, we're all the... You know, Shinigami are gathered up. Renji is like, what do we do? And then Ukitake steps in. He's like, I will take Reo's place. And it's like,
who are you?
What are you talking about? Only you were saying that.
I like to shout that out of Bleach whenever any character shows up. I'm like, which one are you? I'm a 13th Division captain. They're 13?
Yes. Which ones are 1 through 12? Well, some of them are dead. Which ones? Explain to me everything that's happened. Shut up!
Where's Grimmjow? No one knows! Somewhere.
So, Ukitake is like, I'll explain later. As he, like, takes his shirt off and this big black mark starts to appear out of his back and starts to spread up into the air. And they're like, what's going on? And Ukitake's like, Mimi Hagi, and he does this whole summoning chant, basically, as the black shape opens into an eye, and everyone's like, what the fuck? And then we have a flashback where someone was like, Mimi Hagi, please save this child, and it was a young, very sickly Ukitake. And then we cut back from that. Shortest fucking flashback ever. He could have just, like, gone straight in to explain this, but nope, gotta get that extra page and a half out of the flashback that's pointless.
It's not overcredited. It's easily just a page. There's easily half a page of just pure black ink that's used to frame Mimi Hagi.
Oh, God. So, Ukitake explains, when I was 3, I was stricken with a serious case of consumption. This white hair is a side effect of it. Some of you may have already known that. I was supposed to die when I was 3. have you ever heard of Mimi Hagi? And I was like, oh, I've heard his name. He's like a god worshipped in outskirts of East Rukan. Yes, an endogenous heteromorphic cyclopean god worshipped in Sakahone of East Rukangai 76th District. And he's just like looking this up on Wikipedia as he's dying.
Wait, hold on a moment. Wait. The Soul Societies worship separate gods?
Apparently.
This concept of the afterlife gets stranger and stranger to me every week of Bleach. I understand finally, they have their own god that creates things, but they're like, no, and then some sections have different gods that they worship, but those are part of the same god or something. Just like, man, this is a fucked up afterlife.
So he goes on and on. He says, yes. They say divine protection is brought to those who offer everything of themselves besides their eye. And this god is said to be the enshrined right arm of Rayo that fell from the heavens long ago. My parents were superstitious people. Soon after the doctor gave up on me, they took me to Mimi Hagi's shrine and began a prayer to offer my lungs. Thanks to that, I live. Even got well enough to serve the Seireite as a soul reaper. Cough of blood. Nuke is like, oh, Captain! Nukatai's like, shut up!
I'm telling my story.
Mimi Hagi's power had its teeth in my lungs. The ritual to spread that power to all organs in my body is called Kamikake. All my organs belong to Mimi Hagi now. By offering them all, I have become Mimi Hagi's dwelling. I am Rayo's right arm itself right now. Nuki was like, you knew this would happen, so you performed Kamikake. That's right. I've been thinking about this moment from the day I found out how I survived. Nothing would please me more than to sacrifice this life I once lost for the cart guards. Bye.
Mech, do you think Ugatake is dead?
He's never coming back, just like Unohana. Fucking hell.
I mean, a lot of this kind of came... And here's the thing. Like, anyone, feel free to tell me I'm wrong, because I fully admit I'm not very well versed in my Bleach lore. So if I'm wrong in this, you know, I'm fully accept that. But is this something that's been, like, kind of foreshadowed or hinted at before? Like, I know we've known he's been sick. But that...
I think that there is a bit, like, where he was, like, having an ominous conversation with Shunsui earlier. And I guess that this is what they were alluding to.
Okay. So it's... Maybe this was never planned from the beginning, but at least this arc, they're kind of like, oh, hey, we made that one dude sick. Why don't we make him sick because... What's its name? The Rio's right arm is inside of him as a separate god that's devouring him. Okay, that's fine. I mean, you can't expect everyone to plan things out from the very beginning. That's fine. I'm almost positive, though, the first time we saw Rio, and again, I could be wrong, I could have sworn he had limbs.
He had one arm.
Oh, he only had one? Okay, then that's...
But it was the right arm.
Oh, that's... That's a shame, then. I was about to be like, alright, that's good. Bleach, you satisfied all my... Oh, you're so close.
So let me double check that real quick.
Okay.
Bleach. Because that'll just be faster for me. It's not a picture. Which arm is he missing? Is he missing both arms? I think he's missing both arms.
He's missing every limb now. Now he's just a...
Now he's been cut in half.
Well, no, I mean, even before when...
Okay, his right arm is definitely missing.
Okay, but all even... Right, that's fine. I thought he was missing all of his limbs now.
I think that one of them is just, like, normally hidden way behind him or something.
It's possible.
He's
it's
definitely missing his leg.
All right, well then...
It would have been safe if he had said either leg, really.
Then we're back to our original thought. Good job. All right, Bleach, you made
Although
these things out
the first
out
time
up.
You saw him, he had all of his limbs, too.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, I'm just like, I don't...
The very first time he was showing, it's like, yeah, there, you can definitely see all the limbs right there.
Oh, wait, so he does have his right arm at that point.
The very first time you saw him?
Yeah, like 100 chapters ago or whatever, when they first showed up there, he does have his arm?
When you know, they had some whole thing where it was like, oh, the Soul King awakens or whatever, and this was, like 100 chapters ago. Yeah, he had all of his limbs.
Okay, that's what I meant when I was like, yeah, he had his arm at one point. That's what doesn't make sense to me. Like, he just lost his arm at some point? I don't know.
While he was within, like, protected, preserved in amber and shit.
Yeah, it just, like, climbed off him. Like, I'm out of here, losers!
Now I'm going to go back in time to Ukidake's past so that his lungs could be sacrificed to me.
And everyone's just like, no, it'll be so convoluted. He's like, try to stop me. He's got like a little, like, Al Capone, like, fucking, like, hat on. Like,
I'm an arm. Look, I don't care if this was actually foreshadowed before this point. This was still tremendous Deus Ex Machina. And it is ridiculous that it's just like, by the way, this is what's happening.
It's definitely not very dramatic. No. Because there's just been too many characters constantly kind of, you know, rotated in and out of the spotlight that I just don't have any real connection to Ukitake. Like, there was a time where this might have meant more, like after that period back in the very young Soul Society when Shunsui and Ukitake were facing down Yamamoto, where I was like, okay, this is a character I can kind of get behind. But it's been so long since he's really done anything of note. Like, the last thing I could think of doing was, I imagine he had some kind of effect during the Aizen, the fake Karakura Town arc. I think he unleashed, like, his Shikai there for the first time on the actual manga. But, like, outside of that, I can't think of an instance of this guy really doing anything. So, in this moment when it's just like, oh, hey, you know, he's been secretly plagued by this angry god that's devouring his body slowly, and he's going to sacrifice himself to become the new Reo, you know, and that'll presumably kill him in, you know, tragic, horrific pain. I'm just, like, struggling to really get invested in it, because I don't have that much of a connection to Ukitake at this point.
Yeah. I mean, that was definitely, like, if you're gonna make the comparison, the whole thing with UA and Avatar, which did a very similar thing. They spread that whole thing out over the course of, like, 3 episodes to introduce her and give you a reason to care for her and stuff like that. And also refer to, by the way, my life was saved as a child and it turned my hair white! And then it's like, so there's a little bit of life of the god that is dying within her so she can sacrifice herself to bring it back and so on and so forth. Whereas, this is as if, like, 5 minutes before the end of the final episode, when you haven't seen her for, you know, all of but like 10 seconds before this point. By the way, I have the spirit of the thing that's dying inside me, and so I'll sacrifice myself to save it. It was like, okay, bye.
Yeah, jeez.
Connection to the character is definitely the most important thing, and yeah, Ukitake has... Yeah.
Like, if this was, and I know, I don't know how they would just rationalize it the same ways with, you know, Ukitake Sipkis, but if this was something like Rukia was making this sacrifice, or someone else like that, I think this would be something that would be more shocking, especially if the pieces added up in, you know, plot development. But yeah, it's just right now I'm just like, I want to care, but I just, there's too many characters constantly being rotated in and out of the spotlight in Bleach for me to really have much of a statement on this. It'd be like, it's exactly like Rose and Kensai dying, where I'm just like, okay,
whatever.
Less characters for me to pay attention.
Now controlled by Mari. Yeah, okay.
I'm like, once they go away, it's two less characters to care about in Bleach.
It's like, okay, but it's the guy who's a zombie. It's like, all right, I care a little bit more about that.
Yeah.
But how do Ukitake, really?
Yeah, it's... That's not the actual end of the chapter next.
Right, because Shinsui is in some dark cavern and he's like, oh, the end is nearing for Soul Society. Hey, you can hear me, right? This is as far as we innocent folks can go. We can't get to the bottom of that darkness. And it's Shinsui, and he's like, but you, I know you can hear my voice. Answer me, will ya? You are in here, right?
Hello, hello.
Hello.
That'd be great. Like, he's like down there trying to do this big dramatic, like, you know, recruitment, and he's down there for like an hour and a half, like, come on, I know you're in here.
This isn't funny, guys.
Come on, things are happening upstairs, and then someone comes by, and they're just like, I see myself in the Scorner Soul Society. Damn it! He wasn't here! I've been talking to the darkness for an hour and a half, and that asshole isn't here? God, I'm going to look like the biggest goober in Soul Society. Asshole, Kensei, and Rose. Oh, phew, that's right, they're still there. They'll be bigger goobers than I am.
He's talking to Aizen.
Yes.
Shock of shocks, Aizen is getting involved. Didn't know that was going to happen.
He was one of the 5 great factors or something like that.
Well, he was war. Also, like, Juhabak tried to recruit him.
Yeah, so...
We knew he was going to show up again. He's one of the guys that Kubo doesn't forget about.
So, What do you foresee Aizen's involvement being, Nick?
Give a fuck.
Let's sit back and digest this. Let's try to find a silver line in this cloud. What can Aizen do?
If Yuromach is the all-seeing, then maybe Aizen's ability to control the senses will somehow negate that ability and give him a vulnerability so that he can be taken down.
And then what do you do with Aizen after that? Do you, like, just make him Orochimaru at that point, where you're just like, he's kind of like a good guy now? Like, he's accepted his loss, and he's just going to, you know, chill with the fact that
I don't even think it'll be addressed at all.
Oh, he'll just be like, I'm
just
done.
Win the battle, and then it won't ever be addressed if that happens to him. Won't even have that passing line about why he's helping.
That'll be great. It's just like a shot of him just walking back into the darkness. He's just like, in case there's ever a Bleach 2.
He goes into the darkness and Shinsui's there. Hello? And it's like, you know we won, right? Wait. You did? Oh, thank God you heard me. Heard you what?
Nothing.
You went to help because you heard me, right? No. I haven't... No. I left way before you got here.
Alright, well, there's going to be some piles of feces around here. Because I have been calling for you for a couple months now. I apologize for that, but I will not clean it up.
So what did I miss? Oh, everyone died except me. Oh. Awesome.
Is the Soul Society safe?
I don't know. I don't give a shit.
Why don't you ask your fucking tattooed friend over there? Oh, he's dead, so I guess you can't.
You want to restart the Gotei 13 with me? I mean, I guess it'll just have to be like the Gotei 2 or something.
He's like, oh, hells no. You're my vice captain. Suck it.
Aww.
But I was Lord Captain Commander! You're mean. Alright, so do we just want to admit... Like, does this reveal do anything for you at all, Nick? Or he's just like, fuck it.
No, okay. I knew this was going to happen.
People are upset. I'm not as upset as I think most people are. I think because this is
How can you even be upset if you know it's going to happen?
This is the thing I'm excited for, though. Like, not like excited, like, oh shit, Aizen's gonna come to fuck things up. I'm excited because I know nothing good can come of this. And I'm just excited because Bleach will hopefully now go from the point of being bad to good bad. Where just everything becomes so ridiculous that I could take enjoyment from it from that angle.
Just everything is Gremmy.
Yeah, just everything. Exactly. Just like Gremmy. You're just like, this is fucking ridiculous. I'm going to have so much fun like just enjoying how bad this is. That's what Aizen brings me. Because I cannot think of a satisfying way to introduce him back into this plot without it just being like, why the fuck are you here? What do you have to... Why didn't we kill you? Oh, here's what the first thing I hope he does... I hope he fucking brings back Reo. Like, I hope he just does that. Just to make Orihime's powers look even more useless.
Hey,
like,
check out what I can do when you can.
Yeah, he's like, look, because I'm basically a god. And I just, poof, I brought back a god. Suck it.
Comes in and is like, hey, you're supposed to be serving 4,800 life sentences.
Bam! He just cuts the dude's head off. Like, oh! There we go. That's Bleach.
Alright, our new Jumpstart series is called Cyborg Roggy. Weird goddamn name. Chapter 1, Roggy. Okay, so, main character is this... I don't even know how to really describe him. He almost looks like he's come from JoJo.
Who, Roggy?
Yeah.
I might just kind of describe him. He's definitely the most punk character we've seen in a Jump series. You know, he's got the piercings everywhere, spiky hair. He's got these weird kind of like high heel boots that go up to his knee.
They look like they're basically almost look like boots from a set of armor.
Yeah,
they have high heels.
Yeah, like Knight Greaves or something like that.
And he's got this kind of halter top with a really high collar, almost like from a jacket on it.
It's certainly an interesting look, which does fit the fact this is a different sort of landscape for a Jump series than we've seen in a while.
Although it is actually, at first it sort of seems like, oh, this is going to be really similar to Hi-Fi Cluster, isn't it? Because they say, oh yeah, people have all sorts of, you know, cyborg body modifications that give them special abilities and stuff like that. And a lot of people kind of go insane with body mods and so on and so forth. Not our main character, but the first person that we're actually introduced to is this guy with goggles named... well, called Dog, I should say. Mm. So Dog is kind of tasked with tracking down someone with his enhanced smell so that these mob guys can take him down, basically. He's serving this guy who has flame control powers and is intimidating him and so on and so forth. So Dog gets the, you know, stuff to track the guy down. He gets in his car, but then someone comes in and, like, chops the entire top of the car off as Dog is luckily ducking down in order to reach something. So they basically rob him and then run off, and so Dog is like, oh, I gotta use my smell in order to find them, and he chases after them and so on and so forth. But as the guys are trying to run away, one of them actually is riding on the other's back, I guess because the one guy just has enhanced running abilities.
Holy shit, this is the third time I've read it, and I finally see, because there's the panel after, he's like, wait, the clothes are in there, we see the two guys, and for the longest time, I thought that the
dude's that guy's legs are coming from his shoulders.
Yeah, I thought that it was his legs. I was so free. I was like, I don't wear his legs at. I don't get it. Is he like some like fucking like missing torso dude? Like he just misses his fucking like knee up to his like, you know, like waist? Like what is that? But now I see that his legs are just the line dashes underneath that because he's so super fast.
Huh. So they keep running away and they're like, oh, alright, yeah, let's get out of here. And one of the guys is like, ah, yeah, don't worry about me running into anyone, because if I do, this hardy body will send them flying like whap. It's an interesting sound effect to it. Whatever. But he runs into somebody and falls over. So, yeah, good job there. And they've run into Broggy, the main character.
And he doesn't fall with a whap either. He falls with a thwam.
Yeah, how disappointing. That's false advertising.
Yeah.
So, because Broggy has kind of knocked them over, that allows Dog to catch up. But they're, you know, of course, angry at him, and they're trying to pick a fight. And so, by the time the dog has shown up, he's basically beating the crap out of the one guy. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm just in the middle of dealing with this guy, so, you know, you can keep on passing by. The other guy tries to attack Broggy while he's distracted, and he, like, launches a kick, and Broggy, like, jumps up and lands on his leg while he's in midair, which seems like it could be potentially very painful for one of them at the end of this, but whatever. He easily deals with the guys, and he's throwing them around and so on and so forth. Unfortunately, the clothes that Dog was given to track the guy end up landing in this fire barrel that some homeless guys are crouched around, and so, yeah, he's not going to be able to track him down. Also, it contained a bunch of his other possessions, too, so kind of fucked from that. So Dog explains the situation and what he was tasked with doing to Roggy and so on and so forth. He explains who the boss of the gang is, named Ignite, who really has a screw loose. And so Roggy says, it so happens that I actually need to find this guy named Ignite. He's actually got like the guy's hand written down on his wrist. So he's looking for him for some reason. And so he's like, you know, I'll help you out for a bit. You know, you just say, I'm the guy. They set up this plan where it's like, say I'm the guy that they're looking for, and say that you've tracked me to this one location. And so, you know, Dog, you know, finds some of the minions. And they all wear these really weird masks, by the way. Like, really weird masks.
Like, they're all looking like they're whistling, like...
So Dog points out Roggy in this one basically abandoned building, and he's like, alright, that's him. Yep, it's him. Yeah. So they, you know, leave the building, and Roggy's like, when are they gonna get here inside? But then the building starts to collapse as basically Ignite has just lit the base of the building on fire and is causing it to collapse and so on and so forth. And Ignite says to his gang, we're gonna burn off some stress today. This guy is really weird looking, by the way. He's the weirdest looking gang leader I have ever seen.
He's got like giant furry shoulder pads, and
it's
like
because he's wearing a fancy jacket and so on.
Yeah, and like he has hair that I guess it must be a separate mask he's wearing over his face because there's not enough hair to create that kind of shade. But it looks like the hair, like it doesn't look like a mask. It looks like it's the shade from his hair, but it's not.
Yeah.
So he has no pupils.
Yeah, it almost looks like he's wearing like a wrestling mask, but he's also wearing a suit with a vest over it, but he's also got this three-wheel motorcycle. It's all a very strange look. Anyway, so Froggy lands safely outside the building. He just kind of, like, does almost comedic, you know, hitting the ground ways, like, ow, ooh, ow. And then the guy's like, oh, you're the guy who put one of our boys out of commission, are you? And Froggy's like, yep. That's me. So he's like, you know, you're really making it theatrical. You're trying to seem like you're just trying to enjoy yourself the way you're trying to take me out, despite supposedly doing this for revenge. And Ignite says, well, yes, stress-free is the very principle that drives our actions. And he basically explains, like, you know, we do things in this way that lets us burn off all our stress. And, you know, we allow people to accomplish things that they wouldn't be able to in the normal law system because we're just so powerful. And it just goes on and on and on. Eventually, Raggy says, all right, so what you're saying is you're basically all emo losers. That's very blunt.
I was like, I don't even think that's really necessarily an emo...
That's not an emo way of looking at things.
I was like, I don't think that's emo in any way. That's anarchy. Yeah.
So, meanwhile, Dog has, you know, driven away from the scene to safety, but then Raggy is running away from the gang and catches up to him on foot. And, so, yeah. So... the entire gang is chasing them. A bunch of them start spitting fireballs at the two of them. Froggy gets in the car and, like, causes it to sort of veer to the side by landing on it so it dodges the fireballs. And then eventually, once they get into an alleyway where they've got kind of a bottleneck for the gang to be driven through, Froggy leaps off the car and just sends all of them flying with, like, one kick. I'm not sure exactly how the physics of this works, but he, like, kicks one, and it smashes into all the others and takes them out like bowling pins. And then Ignite shows up, and so Raggy says, all right, now I can finally get down to business, and he pulls his sleeve down to reveal the entire note he's got written on his wrist. He says, all right, it says, give back the umbrella. Yeah, this kid says that it came from her dad, so she wants it back. Apparently you trashed both the dad and the house, so you got it? And Ignite's like, what are you talking about? He's like, hey, Dog, is this really our target? And Dog's like, And Froggy calls Ignite a paintbrush. And then Ignite starts some of this tornado of fire. It's
pretty spot on insult, by the way. Dude kind of looks like a paintbrush.
He does look like a paintbrush. Makes a lot more sense than the emo losers thing. So Froggy grabs Dog and they run into... an alleyway to dodge the fire, and what the fuck? Oh, I do like this. Froggy's like, okay, well, I guess that you are kind of involved in this, so I'm gonna give you a share of my payment. So here, he's like, what is this? Candy. I know it's candy. Why are you giving me to this? Well, look, I made a promise to take that guy out. So, yeah, basically, the kid who said that she wanted her umbrella back paid him in candy, which
he's like, what, you think I like grape flavored candy? Ew. That's like the fourth best. You get a bag of Skittles, you eat those first so you can wash the taste out with something better. It's like you don't even know your Skittles.
I don't know, I like grape Skittles.
You're crazy.
Anyway, if they're the fourth best, then how would you eat those first, because there are five flavors of Skittles?
Well, everyone hates lime.
I like all Skittles.
Alright, well, I don't really care for Skittles, so I guess I'm maybe not the best thing
for...
Well,
I love Skittles.
Alright, well, I would go lime, then grape, then we got lemon. What's the red? Is that strawberry or cherry?
Strawberry.
And then just strawberry. There's strawberry.
They have special events where they've ruined it by replacing it with cherry.
Because I see red, and I kind of just want to call it red, but red could be strawberry or cherry, depending on the situation. It would be strawberry, and then we finish off with orange.
Mm.
That's the Skittles hierarchy.
I don't have a particular order. Anyway, so Ignite manages to grab Froggy and he slams him against the wall and his entire body is burning as he does this and so on and so forth. He's like, ah, now I remember when I was blowing off stress last week, it started raining just as I finished up, so I just reached out and snagged the nearby umbrella. And now you're like, hey, give back the umbrella! Ha! Aren't you embarrassed? You gotta be unbelievably stupid to walk into your death over something as pointless as that. But hey, at least it was a fun opportunity to release some stress. And Roger's like, well, I remember something too. was that one guy from 2 days ago, the buddy of yours who got trashed? And it's like, what? Oh, yeah. I remember him saying something about stress or whatever. Yeah, it's coming back to me. Okay. Well, so I beat him up. But, yeah. All right. I didn't hit him that hard, though. It's not like he would be taken completely out of commission. All right. So, yeah. He beats up Ignite after that. He says, oh, I have this request from much further back to eliminate scum like you. And then he grabs the guy and he headbutts him. And that just completely knocks him out. He doesn't have, like, some super special attack or thing. He just headbutts him and he's knocked out. And then he's like, okay, I've got to go look for the umbrella. And then a dog comes up in his half car. And he's like, hey, I found the umbrella.
Credits.
Basically. And they Rocky introduced himself finally at that point. But
yeah. He's just like, oh, hey, your dog will give you a new name. My name's Rocky. And then you see his...
Which Rocky is written on his fingernails.
Yeah. So...
I feel like I actually liked this series the first time reading it through then after that, because now that I look at it again, it's just like, wow, not a lot happens in this.
It is weird. The first time I read this series, I liked it, and then the more and more I've read it, and especially through this recap, I'm just like, I don't like it. My issue with it, I think, is it's just kind of hard to read and follow. I just kind of felt like I was losing myself in the art a lot of times. Mm-hmm. The thing I think works with the series is I love its setting. I think its setting is unique. It's well established. I like the idea of, like, this is a society that continuously modifies themselves, and the reason things have gotten so out of control is because, you know, the government just took too long to try to get any regulations for it, so by the time that they finally were starting to, they were just too strong. Like, you know, you can actually put some kind of social commentary in. You don't have to put it hard, but, you know, you're putting some kind of message in there that I can easily kind of grasp onto, and I think it works for this world. This chapter just, I don't know, felt a little bit convoluted. Like, I guess maybe it'd been better if Rocky just actually goes up to Inferno or whatever his name is and beats him up and shows what he can do. But it's like, oh, hey, I'm going to, you know, hang out in this building and I'm going to pretend to be a decoy. Thing. And
I'll pretend to be the guy that they're looking for, not realizing that I'm the guy that they're looking for and stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, right, it's Fairy Tale.
Hopefully it'll get better, but, you know, let's move on, yeah. Fairy Tale.
Fairy Tale, chapter 421, Wendy and Sharia. And, of course, our cover page...
Let's just be reminded of that last one, why don't we?
Our cover page is Wendy and Sharia holding hands, butts thrust out in a cute idol pose. I don't know if there's a name for it. But a god slayer girl who recites a mantra of love, a dragon slayer girl who dreams of romance. We are one soul, one voice, the sky sisters. It's already setting ourselves up on a pretty good note this time around.
Nice to know that Sharia had another outfit that was even more cringe-inducing.
One that's year. Essentially a pair of hot pants and a camisole for a 16-year-old. Actually, I think that might have been too old. Wasn't she 14?
We established that she was 15 at one point. She might be 16 now.
Okay. Yeah. There we go. That's not horrifyingly creepy. Just pretty creepy. All right. So we open up in Lamia Scale.
4 years ago, Chris would have made horrible jokes about this.
Yes. 4-year-old Christopher would still be like in a 5-hour long.
4 years ago, I said.
What did I say?
4-year-old.
Oh, 4-year-old Christopher would have no idea what a vagina is and would not be... He'd just be like,
4-year-old Christopher would be like, girls are dumb.
They're icky. It's, you know, 26-year-old Christopher still has those thoughts sometimes, like, illsies. And it's just like, you think, yeah, they're like, are we really illsies or is it just because you're an undateable pig? Like, well,
yes.
Touche, ladies. You win this round. So they start off in Lamia Scale, and Wendy is super duper embarrassed about what she did, but she totally did it.
Nice to know, yeah.
Yeah, and everyone in the guild's joking about how silly it was. Until Natsu and Lucy show up. And they're like, oh, wow, it's awesome.
Another Wendy comes in.
Yes, another one. Even more scantily dressed now. And Natsu's like, it's good to see you. All right, let's go. So he just picks her up and starts walking away.
I fucking love that.
And
gross over shoulder. Let's go.
And Wendy's just like, oh, you're trying to build the guild back together? No one's heard from the master in a whole year. And they know that the Magic Council had problems with this because they actually basically took the... Well, they say some of the 10 Wizard Saints, so I don't know if that means all of them outside of Makarov or if there's more who didn't join, but essentially, the Ten Wizard Saints have banded together to reform the council. So Jurasan's in there. I don't know why I gave him the San, like I'm fucking, like I know him. Which I also assume means that tree guy that we met before was in there too. I don't know, he was a member of Fairy Tail, so maybe he left because the guild disbanded as well. But they note that Makarov probably should have been on the guild and may, or on the council, and you know, it's kind of interesting that he ran off. But Nats is like, whatever, don't give a fuck. Wendy, come back with us. And Wendy's response is, nah, I'm cool. She says, I'm a member of Lamia Scale now, so I'm afraid I can't go with you. And they're just like, what? And Leon's even like, you know, you don't have to, like, humor us. You can go back with them. You don't have to, like, force yourself for this. And then Charlotte comes up and she's like,
This is a really weird moment.
Yes. Carla's like, I would appreciate it if you didn't try to force her. And then she explains her human transformation and all that, and it gives her a slight bit
of
magic.
They're shocked that she's human. They saw her in the last chapter.
Yeah, well, I don't know. she explains that it gives her slightly more magic power, and her premonitions are stronger in this form, and then she immediately turns back into a cat. So I guess that's just something she'll do every so often. But she's like, I'd appreciate if nobody would try to force her. But are you sure this is what you want, Wendy? Like, immediately being the voice like, hey, are you also totally sure about this in front of your friends that you don't want to go back with them? But Wendy nods, and the rest of the characters, or rather Natsu and Lucy, go off into a hotel room where they're kind of just blank staring comatose until Natsu decides to tickle Lucy's feet with Happy's tail. So she punches him for being a pervert and a weirdo.
It's like... then stop being Lucy then.
She's like, what? Is my sole existence in this universe just to be a sexual, like, fucking fetish machine for you guys? Like, well, sort of. I mean,
you are a female character written by Hero.
Yeah, I mean, you really have about a 90% chance of it happening. But Natsu says, like, I won't let this happen. We'll just have to kidnap her. And Lucy's like, no. But she has, like, a face like, okay. Like, it's... I guess that's her being like, no! But to me, I thought she was actually agreeing with it.
If you're going to do it on your own, then, oh well.
Yeah, she's like, I won't stop you. We cut away then to Wendy and Sharia's place. I guess they're roommates now. And Sharia's just like, Wendy, about today. And Wendy kind of cuts her off like, don't worry, I'm not going anywhere. And she notes that Sherry, who was the Mira Jane rival character for that arc, who had a bikini battle with her. And when I say bikini battle, I meant they literally just turned into different bikini poses because fairy tale. She left to get married. So if Wendy left, then that would mean Sharia is all alone, except for the other three members of fucking Lamia Scale who would be
which
there.
Which Sharia says.
Yeah, she's like, I wouldn't be alone. I have a bunch of other people there and I love them all, you know. I know that you're my...
like, but they're icky boys.
Yeah, she's like, I know they're not my age and gender, but, you know, I have to shit all over them like they're fucking nothing. And she knows, like, and if you're just staying with me out of pity, then that doesn't really seem like friendship. And Wendy looks kind of shocked by that. But before they could really get any further into this and start making out, which was what I assume girls do at fucking sleepover parties, there are explosions everywhere, and we see Leon and all the various members of Lumia Scale are trying to escort people around as we see giant monsters are attacking the city. And they're like, what is this? And they're like, there's another guild, Orochi's Finn, that we've been on bad terms with for, like, forever!
Good to know.
I guess Sharia is just like Alice, she's taken up Valley Girl in her meantime of stuff. She's like, but Orochi has really sunk to new depths that they're using monsters to attack. And they note that this is the work of, what's his fucking name here? They say it. Oh, Beastmaster. They don't actually give him a name. Never mind. So they don't give him a name, but it's just the dude with the weird face that we saw last chapter, who is a Beastmaster, and he is, using these legions of monsters to essentially force, Lamia Scale into, slow, inevitable conquest. They're just gonna keep hammering them out with these monsters until they're running out of magical power, and then, Orochi's Finn can swoop in and take them down, and then they'll be the victors. Of course, Fairy Tail and Miyascale aren't going to let this happen. So Luffy. Natsu's like, well, what about if we just go from the sky and go over the monsters? And they're like, that plan will work. So Natsu's like, I'm all fired up. Let's go. And then Shuri just kicks him in the face and takes Happy. And she's like, yoink. All right, let's go. And she
and like, okay.
Yeah. And she and Wendy fly off to presumably go save the city. That's Fairy Tail this week, Nick. It's a weird, like, piece of development for Wendy. But then again, Wendy's always had kind of a weird version of development. Like, I'm going to cut my hair and then do nothing and sit here, then grow it all back. I guess it's kind of cool they're attaching characters into existing guilds to give them something. But this does kind of feel like a little bit of a hollow, like, point. Like, oh, Wendy won't rejoin the guild because she has too close of a friend in Shuria. I mean, it's
I'm
not...
I'm hoping that there is another reason that she's not revealing, because if that's the reason, then to have Shuria just immediately go, like, I'll be fine, you know?
Yeah, like, it's not even like Shuria's like, you can't go, or something like that. Like, Wendy's feeling guilty about it. If everyone else is like, you can fucking go back to your guild. We all knew this was going to be temporary. You know, thanks for the memories, but you can fuck off now. And Wendy's just like, no! You'll be sad without me!
People will be sad without me. And all the fanboys outside are like, yeah!
Yeah, like, we'll be so sad! We'll only have one 15-year-old to ogle!
And he's like, I'm like 12. Oh, it's even better!
Oh, yeah! We'll have time to watch you grow up and mature!
Okay, I think I want to go now.
Total off-topic tangent, but I bought One Piece Film Zed, which is one of like the newest One Piece film, and in it there's a character who has the power to like return you 12 years. So if you get touched by her, like she'll like de-age you back 12 years. So like a couple characters, like Robin gets touched, so she's 18, and Nami gets touched, so she goes back to being, I guess, what, 8? Because like Nami is 20. She was 18 at Star Series, 2-year time skip, so I'm assuming like 8 years old. So it's 8-year-old Nami, and Sanji has this line where he's like, oh, we don't have to rush to get you back, because if you stay the way you are, then I'll get to watch Nami Swan grow into the beautiful woman she was! And I'm like, that is by far the creepiest thing Sanji has ever said. Holy shit, that's... I was like, holy shit, that's fucked up, dude. Why would you say that? It was so bad.
Ugh. Let's just move on to Food Wars.
Yes.
Food Wars, Shokugeki no Soma, Chapter 107, Ideal Distance. So while Soma and Naruto are busy at the Mitamura Cafe, or cuisine, whatever, Megumi has been assigned to go to the same restaurant as Erina. And understandably, she is very intimidated by this. So they go into this very, very fancy restaurant, and everyone is basically friendly to them, and Megumi's like, oh, it's nice to meet you, and she's like, yes, it's nice to meet you, Megumi. She's like, you know who I am? Well, yeah, I was there for the Fall Classic, and you were, you know, one of the finalists, so yeah, I know who you are. And so Megumi's like, oh, yay!
Arina-senpai noticed me!
So... But Arina just kind of says, like, all right, look, don't do anything unnecessary. Just concentrate on nothing but staying out of my way. And Megumi's like, all right. But Megumi thinks to herself that it seems that Arina is on edge for some reason. So Arina goes into the kitchen, and the head chef says, you know, let's start you out doing, you know, washing dishes. And so the manager is like, wait, we can't do that. You know, that's Erina Nakiri. You know, you should give her a post appropriate to her status. And the chef says, like, they're a pair of rookie kitchen hands, and it's natural that they start with simple chores. And besides, I don't like the idea of letting mere high school students into my kitchen in the first place. And Erina says, I refuse. Assign a proper person to this task. It is proper to assign a person task appropriate to their skill level. But if all you're going to do give me are minor chores, then all I can say is that it is a gross error in personnel assignment. And so there's a really weird moment where Megumi just kind of like fades into her own world, because she thinks that they're going to get in trouble for this, that she goes into her mind to write a mental letter to Soma.
I do find that funny. Like, that is something that characters will do in different series at various points. You know, they'll be like, you know, dear grandmother, today I met the strangest person today. But I like that she's, you know, in a fucking actual place, and when she's escaping into her mind, that's the sole thing she's deciding to do, is to write a letter that will never go to anyone, because it's in her fucking mind.
Oh, okay. We go over to Midabura's cuisine, and people are kind of congratulating Aratsu, and they're like, oh, you know, you were a big help today, and so on. Aratsu, as she's, you know, getting ready to wind down, she sees Midabura looking at a picture on the wall, and she's like, oh, was that a picture of the restaurant? And he says, yeah, this is back when my father was the chef, and I remember it like it was yesterday. We had our local regulars coming by all the time, and because we have such a big menu, lots of couples and families would come in on the weekends. And so basically Mirama says, you know, it's times are tough now, but someday I want it to be like it was back then. Then Aratsu spots Soma, and he's deep in thought, And she's like, what are you doing? You're supposed to be sweeping the floors. Quit slacking off. And so I'm like, are you sure we're going to be okay like this? Because, you know, we're supposed to make a visible achievement, and I'm not sure this is good enough. And Aranda's like, well, everything's working out fine. You know, things are going smoothly now. And so I'm like, yeah, but I don't know. And he brings up, you know, I wonder how everyone else is doing. And of course, Arato thinks about how Aaron is doing. And we go to that restaurant. And so someone is trying out the food, and they're like, you know, this tastes different. And the manager's like, I'm so sorry. No, it's amazing. It's way better than before. It's perfect. This is wonderful. You guys are going to get your first star soon. Meanwhile, in the kitchen, Arina is fucking directing everything. It's completely taken over. And we're like, oh, please test this. And she's like, yeah, that's fine. That's good, yeah. And the head chef is like, oh my god, she just swept in and took it over in mere days. Just imagining, like, Irina, like, towering over everything, domineering everything. But Irina actually walks up to the chef and says she has, like, 13 different things to suggest for, just this seasoning or something like that. She's like, so, you know, would it be alright if I gave you my opinions? And credit to him, the head chef kind of sucks up his pride and is like, hey, yeah, alright. He realizes, yep, she will improve things.
She's better than me, too.
Yep. Well, you know, I think that they've actually established, you know, in certain places that Irina's personality has, like, gotten people fired because of that, so...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kind of showing the guys a little bit wiser than that. Meanwhile, Megumi is on dish duty, so she's just thinking to herself, there's got to be something that I can do. But I actually kind of like this arrangement. You know, it's not that they're doing badly, it's just that Irina has taken so much attention that Megumi's chances to actually make an impression are very, very quickly fading. Then we get a cut outside to where this... I don't even know how the fuck she is supposed to be doing anything from this point of view. It's one of the faculty who is investigating to see how the students are doing. Kazune Nishizono. That is a weird name. And so she's like, all right, well, it looks like, you know, Nakiri's going to be fine. And Stu's like, all right, I'll go check on the Yukihira Arato pair. Looks like they were assigned to a difficult one. Will they even realize what the true test of Stagiaire Week is? Meanwhile, Arato and Soma are, you know, kind of walking away. And Sarato's like, why are you so dissatisfied? You know, it's not haute cuisine. How the fuck do you say that? Fucking French words!
Is this your, like, your... Basically your version of me trying to say someone's name? Like, if it's just French words, you're just gonna be like, I don't know.
So, Arato's like, you know, everything's kind of fine. You know, the staff is fine. All we need to do now is give our best until the end of the week. And besides, I want to do everything that I can for them. And so just immediately turns to her and he says, are you really okay with that? I mean, that's not the place where you really want to be, right? That restaurant has got to change. Besides... Oh, never mind. Let's see. Just walks off.
I do like the idea that that one woman's watching everything. Like, she's like, I'm keeping an eye on the students from behind a telephone pole across the street from the restaurant where I can't even see them because they're back in the kitchen.
I do like how there's just this one guy passing by, and he's like, what the fuck is she doing?
What are you doing? How are you going to watch them from there?
He just starts tagging along with her.
He's just like, I bet they're not doing very well. You're right. I bet they aren't doing very well. You should fail them. I will fail them. I can't believe they ruined it this much. I'm like, oh, you're just an asshole.
It's actually a pretty kind of quiet chapter, almost, but I quite liked it.
So. Mm-hmm. Some good development in it.
Alright, what is Gakuhotei?
Gakuhotei.
Okay.
With a very cool color cover page this week.
Yeah.
I like how fucking giant Kotaru's fucking attorney's badge is compared to Ibaku's. And you see, like, Ibaku has this little tiny attorney badge, and then
like, it's part of his belt.
Yeah, it's like a fucking giant medal on his chest.
His freaking outfit is pretty badass in color, though.
Yeah.
Alright, so we start off with a big old flashback from Picasso's perspective, Hikari de Kasu, when he, like, first met Van Gogh, and he's like, oh, you know, you're amazing, Van Gogh, I hope I can paint like this someday, and he's like, well, you're gonna have to surpass me first. Or not Van Gogh, Picasso and...
Da Vinci.
Oh, saw a work by Van Gogh-chan, which we'll find out about later. But then Da Vinci was like, well, you have to surpass me first. And then, oh, what are you saying? You know, having a dispute over who was better. And get a very weird little bit because the woman who has been nicknamed Van Gogh is like, is that my name? No, I don't know any such person. Who am I? I'm... just a meanwhile image of this person painting something on a pyramid or something like that,
like very odd visual, like a staircase almost of ice or maybe splattered paint that just seems to like lead on into like infinity.
Yeah, really odd visual.
I think it's her saying that she's just a copycat.
So basically, Ibaku is there, and Tento is like, isn't being at school on a day off kind of thrilling? You fucking nerd, Tento.
Tento likes school. They feed Tento there.
They are obligated to. it's Monday, but Tenmin Elementary is closed for its charter day, but we've come to meet with the accused. The concerned party is, you know, reintroduced to Da Vinci and Picasso and so on and so forth. Inugami will be defending classmate and acquaintance Picasso, but the person who has shown up to be Da Vinci's attorney is Inugami's former classmate, Sarutobi.
Oh my goodness! I mean, we do it, but I like to do it because I'm adding the music now.
So, meanwhile... Sarutobi and Da Vinci are meeting in a restaurant, and Da Vinci's like, so do you understand the situation? And Sarutobi's like, I do get it. In short, you and Picasso's works are identical, and since you didn't copy his, he must have copied yours, right? Well, they do look similar, so... Da Vinci's like, oh god, this guy... I don't know about this guy.
Holy shit, I'm fucked. The attorneys were supposed to be smart. He looks like a dumbass.
So you believe me, right? Oh, not really. What? What? And so Sarutobi says, sorry, but the only things Kotaro Sarutobi trusts are what these two eyes can see. But no worries, I'll see that you don't lose, because I have my own reasons for wanting to win this one, too. And he heads off, and he's like, what, you're leaving already? Yeah, this popular guy's busy. Got another gig, and takes out a smoke bomb and throws it on the table.
He's like in a goddamn fucking restaurant, and he just hurls a smoke bomb out into the table to leave.
You're like, oh, why can't he just leave normally? As he dashes off into the rain, going ding. meanwhile, where Picasso and Ungami are, Picasso is talking about his work introducing them to the art club. He's like, see, these are masterpieces of our predecessors. This is the smell of dried acrylic paint, and whenever I come here, it stirs up my creative winds. So, here are the paintings. They're the heart of the problem, and And so Buck was like, yeah, Bill likes some stuff here. He compares a bunch of things. Like, yeah, I guess these two, you know, yeah, they have different subject, but how they painted the sky and their brushstroke styles seem similar.
10 to 30's photos not exactly same! They're different!
Then it's like, oh, here's this is home for the end of May with the theme of spring. Then it's like, they both chose to paint Sakura!
Those aren't real trees, those fake trees! I know, because I try to eat one!
They try to eat a tree?
A painting of a tree.
The layers of his stupidity increase.
So Obak is like, well, you know, one could argue it's not impossible that both were picked cherry blossoms with spring as the theme. And Picasso's like, are you calling my work generic? Then it's like, okay, but seriously, though, these two are literally the exact same thing. So Picasso's saying, Da Vinci must, you know, have stolen a peek at my rough draft and copied that. So if I was thinking to himself, like, okay, you know, if we were just talking about the first two, you know, I would not have let this go to court, but seriously, this third one, what the hell caused this to happen? This much likeness proves sufficient justification. It goes way beyond quizzical resemblance, and if it's not a fluke...
Dun-dun-dun.
Meanwhile, Tinto looks up at a painting on the wall, like, this one pretty!
This one nice painting!
So Da Vinci says, ah, yes, this is a work by Van Gogh, someone who I revere as my guru. She was a student here at Tenbin Elementary until 8 years ago, but when she was in sixth grade, this pastoral placed in a prefecture-wide contest, and so her name is still remembered as a legendary alum. Indeed, it was also this powerful painting of Ms. Van Gogh's that inspired me to become an artist, too. That was like,
well, is she a woman? That's a girl person?
But Van Gogh, not a girl name.
Van Gogh, a dude man. Saw it with eyes.
So, Van Gogh comes in. Her full name is Honami Go. So, not that good.
I can see it, yeah.
It actually doesn't seem nearly as contrived as the other nicknames either. So.
Well, the one that was Da Vinci wasn't too bad. It was the Van Gogh, or the Picasso one that was like, my name's like Aaron Picchio. Like, all right, you're kind of working for this kid.
She comes in, and so he's like, oh, it's nice to see you, Ms. Van Gogh. And she's like, oh, come on, call me Van Gogh Chan like you used to. Are you feeling old? Anyway, she's like a teacher's assistant. Picasso goes on and on about how great she is and what she's accomplished and so on. So she's like, oh, I'm not really all that great. Especially since recently, you know, I can't seem to paint anything. And Tinto like, could she be in a slump?
She a dummy dumb, can't paint.
Me think that called artist block.
Dad said you should be turned into dog food and glue.
What the fuck?
If the horse can't run, it dog food and glue. Tinto Dad say that all the time to Tinto.
Okay, Tinto. So Van Gogh has this very kind of morose recollection of when they were all younger in the club together, and they kind of gave each other a nickname and so on and so forth, and they just loved painting together. Just like, you know, that was the best period of my life. Then Abaku was like, hey, Picasso, can I see that article on Suenari Yamo? Like, yeah, sure, here. So he looks at it, and he's like, And Tinto's like, what's going on? And Abaku says, I don't know anything about art, but it's just, whether you take Picasso or Miss Van Gogh, a student's work sure resembles his or her mentors. And we get a close-up of Van Gogh's expression from the side, just kind of frowning. And then Abaku's like, oh crap, I just lost track of time. Come on, Tinto, we gotta go. And he's like, what's going on?
We had a thing to? All right! I wrote it on arms to never forget!
Picasso, you know, shuts the door. All right, I'm counting on you guys. And then after they've left, Van Gogh's expression gets this very big scowl on her face, and she's leering behind her and stuff.
Nick, I'm just going to come out and say this theory now, as wild and impractical as it may be. I think Van Gogh may be the real criminal in this case.
I'm mostly thinking about stuff like, what would she have to gain from this, though? So,
well, she's been a... if my initial theory that she's a plagiarist as well, then perhaps maybe that's, I don't know, maybe she wants to, I don't know, fuck up her own students. I don't know exactly.
She did something so that Van Gogh would gain inspiration from something, not knowing it belonged to Picasso or something like that.
Something like that. It's pretty clear she's got a sinister
situation. She's definitely
situation.
Involved in this in some way. She's got something going on. Mm-hmm.
And we might find out a motivation in time.
I'm sort of getting a bit of a red herring vibe off of her, though. So.
Nick, don't buy into the red herrings. I did that before and it didn't work out. I looked like quite
red
the
herring was the criminal once.
That was great. It's Scooby-Doo.
I was right.
It's the one episode that Fred didn't get to actually predict it, though. Oh, I'd feel bad if
that was a fucking great episode.
Infamous Plants gonna have to search through fucking Young Scooby-Doo or Scooby-Doo Jr. or whatever the fuck
it's
was called.
A pup named Scooby-Doo, I'll have you know.
Just to find the one episode where Red Herring actually was the criminal.
I love that show. Anyway, so they look at this little ticket and Tento's like, oh, you know, this seems kind of like a dull case. Topic, principal hair and makeup case. What the fuck is that? So, they head in, and after Nintendo's made that comment, Baku's like, you know, your class is the one that's fucking weird, man. So they head into another school, Tenden Second Elementary, and they're like, oh man, we're really late. Okay, but it's only 5 minutes late. We should be fine. You know, we probably haven't missed anything important. But then they get through the door, and the class is already in their end of day meeting. And Baku's like, what the hell? You already finished? And so Abaku grabs the teacher by the collar, like, what's going on? So what about the classroom session? And Sarutobi's like, it's already over and done. And the prosecutor is fucking crying.
He's a meanie.
Star-spangled top hat and waistcoat. His sleeve is an American flag.
Oh, it's just awful. It wasn't even a fair fight at all.
So Sarutobi's like, ah, come on, Shura, man. You are simply way outclassed. Don't touch me.
Go away.
So Tendo's like, what did he do to lead us such a one-sided route? And so they kind of take the conversation outside, and so Baku says, it seems to me you're still up to your old tricks, Sarutobi. Ha! Well, that just sounds like sour grapes, Baku. I finished my classroom sessions in 5 minutes. Can you achieve that with your Ranpa? Nope. That's a rhetoric stamping. What the fuck is Abaku said? You mean rhetorical stumping.
Shut up!
So Sarto says, well, having said that, it's not that I don't acknowledge you here. In fact, it's because I admire your skill that I say again. If I win our session 2 days from now, just meekly accept your defeat and come work for me, Abaku. If we join forces, we'd become an unbeatable defense team.
The Jedi would stand no threat against our power.
I bet we could even solve that. No, what's necessary in an attorney is neither speed nor strength. We two who lived through that session ought to know that better than anyone else. They're like, could he be referring to the bloody classroom case?
He talking about that Big Dad thing? I bet he is.
So Sarutobi says, but that's exactly why. And Bobaku's already leaving. He's like, all right, Tendo, come on, let's go. And Sarutobi's proud says he's going to beat him. I already know the truth behind the plagiarism. And so Sarutobi just kind of thinks to himself back to a time when they were young. And Sarutobi seemingly defended Baku from some bully with his super awesome ninja skills. So he just thinks to himself, crybaby Baku, you really rile me up. And then, as they're outside, Tenta says, so what exactly was it? What was the bloody classroom session? And that's where the chapter ends.
I saw the clippings on your TV, or no, on it, and I went back to your office to get the keys that day. I thought it had something to do with both you and Sarutobi. What exactly is this bloody classroom session? And fucking Abaku's like, wait, you talk like a normal person? Sometimes me do smart things. Not all time, though.
Occasionally, brain cells do spark.
Synapse Spider Right one time a day. I'm surprised dumb Tento knows what a synapse is. I think it's a licorice candy. Like Good and Plenty.
In a comment my dad make when he throwing me into barn.
Yeah, sometimes dad throw me in closet and say, Tento, you no come out until you smart, Tento. Then he puts a bunch of candles in there, waits for the room to burn down. He says I get in big trouble if I blow them out.
This is horrifying.
Like, wow, Tento has a really dark family life. Holy shit.
Oh, God. Alright, let's power ahead. Kagami Gami Chapter 3. Stuff happens.
Alright, Kagami Gami Chapter...
There's a guy with a rabbit head. Okay.
Chapter 3. The chapter we probably should have done before because shit
really
actually happens.
Chapter 2.
Yeah, they introduce characters, and they really, really should have done this instead of a really chapter.
It turns out that there's this entire organization of Shikigami that work actually in line with the government, even though the government doesn't really acknowledge their existence, and this new character, who seems like he's going to be important, is sent out to collect Kyosuke, and he just takes him out of there. Apparently Mako's not really involved in this set of events. And they, Kyosuke is basically like, okay, there's a guy who's already on the case and you're going to be his partner. You've got to find Hollow Rabbit, who is the guy who gave the Ripper guy his power. That's the guy who taught him the Shikigami stuff. Meanwhile, Hollow Rabbit, who actually looks like a giant humanoid rabbit with a big old head, is sitting down with the guy and he's like, swallow this pill. And it's got this really creepy looking tadpole demon thing swimming around inside of it. He's like, come on, you won't die. You'll be fine if you swallow it. Come on already. You want special power, so just do it. It's the power to change your life. Do you want to spend years toiling like a dog in training? It turns out that the guy was actually an undercover Shikigami agent, and his comb is his focus, and he turns it into this big old sword thing, and he's like, I'm gonna kick your ass, and don't underestimate the amount that is necessary to become a Shikigami. It's more like dozens of years to become a master. I'm Keiichi Shido, and that's all you need to know. And Hollow Rabbit,
that's all you're going to do, because you don't get a chapter 4.
Yeah. So Hollow Rabbit's like, oh really, well, what are you gonna do to me? And he's like, giant comb. And then suddenly Hollow Rabbit goes,
he has a really creepy face.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell he's even doing. He just kind of points his fingers. Nothing happens. He just goes, you want some of this? Rah!
Maybe that's his attacking style. This is such a weird, because that's the end of the chapter, essentially. The rest of it's just like, oh, hey, Mako came in the car.
Oh, by the way, Mako snuck into the car.
Yeah, so they're all going to go together, but you're not going to see it because that's...
This series has the weirdest chapter endings.
And this is such a good chapter for the most part in terms of fucking establishing what this series is. Because this chapter almost feels like a horror series. Like, this rabbit is a creepy, weird-looking thing with this giant head that seems to constantly get bigger as it's, slowly trying to, just mind-screw this kid into following his orders to swallow a monster that's going to control him.
And it reminds me of Doubt.
Yes, it's so disturbing. And this guy reveals his power, and it's this giant monster cone with eyes and giant teeth and, weird, fucking, tiny raptor claws, little tiny hands in it, and you're just like, holy shit, this art's distinct, this tone and setting is unique. Why was the second chapter this weird, I'm gonna clean up your apartment, yay? Oh man, such a terrible decision to put this as chapter 3.
But yeah, that's what happened. We're not getting any more Kagami Gami, probably, unless it happens to win the poll, which I don't know about that. But it was all right, and we got Mako out of it, who was pretty good while she was around. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll definitely always appreciate for that.
Moving on to My Hero Academia, where things happened that I was able to follow. Yay!
And as a plus side, they've started doing... Alright, well, I'm sure they've been doing it before this, but this is the first time we've gotten to see one. Character profiles at the beginning, so we get to actually know who these characters are. They'll explain their quirks and everything like that, so it's a lot easier to know who these characters are.
So guy with two toned hair was Shoto Todoroki, and it's like he's got, he can freeze anything that touches the right half of his body, and his left half erupts with a blazing inferno, and he can sometimes he needs to regulate his own body temperature, and if he uses his left side, his burning side, for too long, well, what in tarnation would happen?
Does it actually say what in tarnation?
What in tarnation would happen?
It does say what in tarnation. Why does it say tarnation?
So,
is a cowboy fucking, like, reading this thing off?
All narration from My Hero Academy, it must be done in cowboy words. So, we have seen that. I do remember this guy now. He was one of the more powerful students, in the academy, and he had a fairly big role when they had the classroom invasion stuff going on earlier on. So it's like, okay, I remember this guy now. All right, that's fine. So Todoroki, meanwhile, has called Midoriya into, a little alley after the cavalry battle. And so he's like, oh, what do you want to talk about here? He's like, look, I wanted to, look, you overwhelmed me so much that I had to break my own pledge. And so Midoriya's like, yeah, I know that. Todoroki says, Ida Kaminari Yaoyoruzu, Tokuyaki, Uraraka. None of them felt it. In that last instant, I was the only one feeling that pressure. I experienced All Might's true power up close, remember? And so he's like, oh no, he's got to know the secret of All Might. And so he says, are you All Might's illegitimate child or something? No, but obviously if I were his kid, I'd try to deny it. So I realize it doesn't sound convincing, but no, So Todoroki says, the reason I'm addressing this is because my father is Endeavor, the second greatest hero of all time. So if you're somehow connected to the number one guy, then all the more reason for me to crush you. And we go to see All Might, who is, of course, addressed Endeavor, Mr. Flamey Beard. And so All Might is like, hey, how are you doing? I figured that, once I saw you, I figured I should say hello. And Endeavor's like, oh, well, in that case, get out of my sight. As if I would have tea with you. Ridiculous. I gotta take a leak, so get lost.
I pee fire.
So All Might cuts him out of the thing. He's like, oh, your son, he pulled off an impressive victory, all without using his left side. I guess someone's been raising him well. And Endeavor's like, what are you trying to say? Well, see, I wanted to ask you for tips about training the next generation, since he's your son and so on and so forth. You think I'd tell you anything? Oh, it's with that damn happy-go-lucky attitude. You piss me off. Know this much. I'll mold him into a hero that surpasses you. That's the only reason I created that kid. Well, then. And then he basically stalks after saying, he's rebellious now, but he'll outdo you. I'll make him surpass you. So, meanwhile, Todoroki is still talking with Midoriya, and he says, my dad, he's a strong bastard who only thinks of becoming stronger. He's gone all out to make a name for himself as a hero, sure, but he's always seen that living legend, All Might, as a roadblock and an eyesore. My father could never beat All Might on his own, so he came up with another plan. And so Midoriya's like, well, why are you telling me this? Okay, have you ever heard of quirk marriages? Apparently not. Basically, after quirks started appearing, strong individuals would choose a partner and force them into marriage for the sole purpose of passing on a strengthened version of their own quirk. And those earlier generations were just lacking in ethics. So he is such a child. Endeavor got all famous for being a hero, made a lot of wealth, and so he got his mother's family to agree to the marriage, and that was to get her eyes his hands on her quirk, which was the ability to freeze stuff, which he could now do. So now he can use both their abilities, but as Todoroki puts it, of course, it was a loveless marriage, and she fucking hated her husband for what he had done, and so Todoroki says, as I remember it, Mom was always crying. I can't stand to see that left side of yours, she said, before throwing scalding water in my face. Ugh.
I'm like, oh, I didn't have to do anything to make this creepy and uncomfortable. You just got a tragic backstory.
So he says, not using my left side against you was my revenge on him. Never using my bastard of a father's quirk. No, by rising to the top without using it, I'll have denied him everything. That's fucking awesome, honestly. I like that character motivation.
It is, The only thing that doesn't work about this, and it's not anything pertaining to his story, but it's just weird, because as he's explaining it, we can see in the background the weird kid with, like, the bubblegum hair or whatever it is, is seeing cheerleaders go by, and is quietly coming up with the plan to convince the rest of the girls in the classroom to dress up like cheerleaders.
Yeah, it's weird how that comes into play later on.
Like, I'm glad, like, we get to see that actually happening, but it's so weird that that's the background for half of this super intense conversation of this character's motivations.
And after that, we also see Bakugo and some other guy. Are they listening in or something? It seems like they are, because they're in, you know, hallways and stuff. They're kind of just thinking to themselves. So Midoriya just thinks to himself, you know, we're in totally different worlds. You know, even though we're both aiming for the top, we're still so different. And he walks off and he says, you know, your connection with All Might, you can keep it to yourself if you want. Either way, I will rise above you with just my right side. And, goddamn it, Midoriya. He thinks to himself, with that kind of backstory, he'd be the protagonist. If this were a comic book.
Tee, but it's not, Nick, but it kind of is.
Midoriya says, you know, I've always had help no matter the situation. I've only come this far because other people helped me. But I'm not going to, you know, he says, I want to be like All Might, and for that I must become the strongest. It might seem like a lame motivation compared to yours, but I won't lose all the people who have helped me. That's how I'll repay them. So let me return your declaration of war with my own. I'm going to beat you. It's nice, you know, it's like, you know, I'm going to beat you for all this dark and stuff reason. And it's like, well, you know, I don't have the same reasons, but there's people counting on me, so I'm not going to let you win. Because that's just the type of person he is, basically. Second round of the sports festival. Yeah, there's that class dressed as cheerleaders. And people are like, what's going on here? And then they look over and it's like, Minata, Kaminari, you tricked us! And they're both giving thumbs up. I was like, yes, we pulled it off.
Kid looks like he's, like, fucking, like, withdrawn off of crack or something. Like, his eyes are all fucking veiny and beady and shit.
Oh, yes, we did it. Oh, man.
I'm jonesing for some fucking underage thigh, man.
Yeah. Like, just thinking to themselves, like, oh, yeah, we managed to convince them. Oh, the girls have to be part of the cheer squad after lunch, like them over there. I don't know why they listen, but okay. All the girls got fooled, alright. They're dressed as cheerleaders now. Invisible girl is like, oh, come on, guys, it could be fun! Fuck you. But yeah, anyway, it's time for the next event. The final event. Between the 16 members of the four winning teams, there will be a formal tournament, a series of one-on-one battles.
Interesting.
Including some of the girls who are dressed like cheerleaders.
I assume they get to change.
Hopefully.
That would suck otherwise.
This is a very straightforward session in comparison to the last one to get into. So
mm-hmm. Well, it'll
be much easier to follow.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely a great chapter to have because it's added a lot to Ice Hair Guy. I'm going to call him Freeze Easy Peak from now on because I'm not going to remember his name.
But that doesn't include his other half.
Yeah, Freeze Easy Peak was, wasn't that both? Was Fire and Ice.
You're thinking of the Ice and Fire level from Banjo-Tooie. Freeze Easy Peak was...
Oh, that's right. What was that then?
Freeze Easy Peak was from...
That was the first one.
Yeah, yeah.
That was just the Ice level. Oh, now I have to look this up. Hold on. Banjo-Tooie Fire Ice level. I'm going to call him Hailfire Peaks, which is his name.
Hailfire Peaks.
Hailfire Peaks. That's actually a pretty badass name.
Hailfire.
So. Here comes Hailfire.
Alright.
One Piece.
Yeah. Nezuko honestly didn't actually have much important stuff happen this time, surprisingly.
He's living
with the most important thing was that Chitoge and Raku came up with this plan where she would just stay with him because, you know, the gang that serves Raku's family could protect her as well as Sugumi, but Claude planted an audio device on her so that he has overheard the plan, and yeah, that's the chapter. There. That was like 40 seconds, so... One Piece.
777! Solo versus Pika!
Alright, so, of course, we've just gotten through with Kairos versus Diamante. and yeah, Kairos has struck down Diamante. There are a bunch of characters remembering, you know, what Diamante basically did to affect them because, you know, how Scarlet's death basically affected them all. Viola remembers it, Tank remembers it, and of course Riku remembers it, and then it all comes down to Kairos, you know, having struck down Diamante, whose head lands right on her fucking grave marker.
It's pretty fucking poetic.
Yeah. Kairos stands triumphant, and Robin kind of pushes Rebecca after to go see her father, and then she collapses, and she's got blood all across her back, which somehow got on her back.
Well, she got, presumably she took the maces to the back.
Right.
I just didn't get why the blood is white on her dress. I guess to show, but
it's not white, but it's supposed to be like red on black.
I guess.
It has to be lighter than the black dress.
Yeah. For the first times I saw it, I thought it meant like her dress had been ripped, but I was like, no, I mean, it's supposed to show blood. But yeah, I mean, it's what it's supposed to be doing. It's just like she took a bunch of wounds in the back. So she actually didn't get out of the tree impervious. She just, mm-hmm. you know, kept a brave face during it, which is pretty cool. Right.
So Rebecca's like, okay, we gotta, you know, patch you up. And then they see that Diamante had fallen across Scarlet's grave marker. And so they remember back to when the toy soldier promised to be by her side always. And now Viola gives the word to everyone on the plateau that Kairos has won. And we're like, yay! We're winning! Yay! And Viola recaps that only four major powers of the Don Quixote family remain. Bellamy the Hyena, the two Supreme Officers Pika and Treble, and the current King and Warlord of the Sea, Doflamingo. And everyone's like, yeah, we're so close to winning! Then Usopp says, hey Riku, where are you going? And Riku's like, well, I'm safe now, so I'm going into town to do stuff. I got groceries to pick up, man.
He's like, I got my lottery ticket, haven't picked it up today. What if I win today? What if today's I went
there? I could buy my own kingdom.
Yeah, I'd be as rich as a king.
Because as much money as I'll have, I'll be a king. So, yeah, we get it. We get it, Your Majesty. Very, very amusing, yes.
I fight for peace, but the one thing I will not tolerate is people not stopping to laugh at my jokes.
No, laugh, damn you.
I don't want to laugh. I want a goddamn chortle.
Meanwhile, the ground starts shaking. Oh my god, it's Pico! He's raised up this giant mountainside with his face on it, and Robin's like, oh, I thought Zolo stopped Zoro! Zoro! I'm not saying Zolo, fuck you. Stopped him. And, but Pico looks down at the defeated Diamante and says, Diamante, you're a miserable wreck! I do like, oh, it's just this fucking mountainside.
Yeah, it's just this giant, like, fucking pillar of rock that just has a face at the top.
Kairos, you know, stands up to try and get back into action. He's like, oh, I didn't just come here to win this one-on-one fight. You know, the battle isn't over as long as there is an enemy standing. And Rebecca's like, no, you can barely move. And so Pika is trying to say, is like, you know, isn't King, you know, Riku the reason that Rebecca's this size? And Rebecca's like, no, you framed him.
Oh, yeah.
And Kairos, of course, is also defiant, so Pika's like, all right, very well then. He suddenly shoots back down into the ground and vanishes, but then tremendous spikes start to pop up everywhere, and meanwhile, Zoro is just like, where the fuck did he go? Why isn't he fighting? I'm supposed to be his opponent. Why is he hiding from me?
You're a jerk.
But he just starts attacking a whole bunch of people from underground, sending them flying. He's even attacking people who are just, like, completely out of it already. And he starts to attack Baby Five, but Sai seemingly takes the hit for her.
Doesn't just try to attack her. He basically summons, like, two walls of spikes and just slams it to, like, crush her between
them.
Yeah,
Sai has to, like, push her out of the way.
So he just basically, I mean, you can see he uses his haki to, like, you know, armor himself. But it is basically, like, just being thrown into an Iron Maiden.
So he's just tossing all sorts of combatants all around the place. And Zoro's like, stop it! Stop going after just the weakened ones! And his head emerges, and this is really weird. Pika says,
Roronoa Zoro, riddle me this!
Brightstone!
That's not a riddle at all!
It's like, it's not even a Zen riddle. It's not even wordplay.
Zoro cuts him in half down the middle, but then finally Pika says, do you know who's on the former royal plateau? That's still not a riddle.
Just wait! I'm
not done!
No. I'm gonna riddle the shit out of you!
Okay. It's the former king as well as other important royal figures of the past, the samurai and God Usopp. It seems the people of this country want Riku returned to power. It's all an eyesore. Doffy is the only king here. The kingdom belongs to Don Quixote! I'm
still waiting for that riddle there.
Yeah. He's like, alright, fine. What has four legs? And then... Fuck, it's a person. Anyway, I'm gonna kill you!
The answer is man, shut up.
So I was like, the answer to riddles is always man.
Okay. So he summons a whole bunch of spikes and he just makes this gigantic, monstrous, rocky form and starts to head for the plateau. And it was like, oh my god, he's crushing everything. And Zoro realizes that he's been drawn all the way to the outskirts of the battlefield. And so now he's got to just chase him down as he goes for the plateau. He's like, oh man, I don't know. I have no idea what's going to happen. You know, one punch from him could smash the entire royal plateau to rubble, and everyone will be crushed and killed instantly. All right, there's got to be something I can do. Okay, I could shoot slashes, but nah, it's too far away. It won't knock him down. All right, maybe I could jump onto his back. No, I can't reach. I just fall down into the town. All right, maybe I should yell really loudly so that they can be aware of the danger. No, they can't hear me at this distance. Maybe I should use a Denden Mushi to tell them to escape. Wait, I don't have one. Alright. Plan 5. Fly through the air and cut him down. And he ties his bandana around his head, puts a sword in his mouth, and he's like, alright, let's go with that one.
Such a badass moment. I love that he's going through these plans, too, and as he's going through them, you know, we're just seeing this rampage of Pika, and, like, they're trying to, like, blow him up with rocks, and he's just like, whatever!
Everyone on the plateau, but especially Usopp, is going, ah!
I'm pretty fucking stoked about this, because I could be wrong about this, but I think this is the first time since the time skip we've actually seen Zoro put on the bandana.
I think it is, because he really didn't need to get serious during the Fishman.
He didn't need to use it against Hyozo, and I don't think he needed to use it against Monet either. So this is the first time in the manga we've actually seen him put on the bandana. I mean, a fight's getting that serious to him. I'm really curious to see what he's going to do here. Like, you know, fly through the air, like what that actual ability is. So
he like whirls around really fast and uses his swords as propellers.
That might be a little stupid, but that'd be awesome if Zoro did it. I'm pretty pumped. I'm pretty pumped for next week. I thought this was a good chapter.
All right. God. Another long episode.
Seven Deadly Sins. Yeah. Melodious got a sword. All right, so...
Awesome. Toriko. Actually a very fucking huge chapter of Toriko. All of Toriko's group were all synchronized and stuff as they jumped forward towards the Monkey King. They're like, oh, we've got 240 combined cells coming towards you. But then... suddenly they have this moment of realization. We cut to inside the shark train as, I guess they sense what happens inside. You know, of course, Kaka was approaching Komatsu, but suddenly Komatsu sat up and looked at her. And as that happens, Kaka's face starts to split down the center, and Komatsu starts to dissolve because he's actually just a poison doll. Then we get some narration explaining that Sunny has created a hair dome, not to cut off any route of escape. It was to conceal their fight from outside viewers, to hide it from sight of that person. And Terry and Kiss and Quinn all suddenly realize what's going on. They turn towards the choo-choo chomper. But inside of the hair dome, it's actually a sphere. But anyway, the Monkey King and the four guys start to engage in... well, a fight, supposedly. And they start off with Bambina doing the whole look-away thing, but all four of them do it in conjunction with him. He starts to go to take their knees out, but they bend their knees forward. And then they're like, okay, now you do it! And they jerk their knees towards his knees, and he dodges them, grabs onto Zebra's arm and does the arm wrestling thing. They flip over, and Zebra lands on his shoulder, and they all have to dash away. but the Bambino looks very pleased about what's going on, and so they're like, all right, there's no mistake about it. Yeah, it's as plain as day now. Now we know what monkey martial arts really is. And so they say it's like, you know, the attack sequence that Bambino attacked them with every time so far has been the exact same, starting with the make you look, then rock paper scissors, then continued to a trip attack, and then arm wrestling. And so we realize it's not a coincidence, and we get a flashback to several days ago during their martial arts training when Coco basically shared suspicions with them. He's like, okay, hey, Zebra, make everyone's voices into sound bullets so that we can, you know, just privately communicate. And so they communicate this information, and Coco said, you know, when we were going through the ruins, as Kaka was giving us this tour, I saw this mural, and it came across, and it was a whole set of dozens of paintings that closely resembled two monkeys that appeared to be doing martial arts poses, but it was almost like they were, you know, doing a dance together, and they matched what the Monkey King did to us in that one split second. And I was able to react to the attack because my memory helped me to read the future correctly. Were the Monkey King's moves really just play? Were they really made you look? A trip attack and arm wrestling. The Monkey King's games, or rather, monkey martial arts itself, might be a dance with set moves. In other words, the whole purpose of monkey martial arts is to perform a monkey dance. So, it was like, you know, it's worth testing, because the last painting on the wall was a merry scene of people sharing a feast. And so Sunny's like, all right, well, how many pounds were there in total? Close to 1,000. Oh, great, this will be easy. And also, some of them were broken off, and I couldn't tell what they were. But I remember all the ones I did see. Fuck you.
Because I have that other power. It's not poison.
And Coco's like, it would only take 10 seconds to dance all 1,000 moves. Yeah, sure, all right, fine. But yeah, Coco says, it could be that's the true way of obtaining pair. Then we must not let that person know about it. And Kaka, her face is completely split open, revealing her vertical mouth. And her skin is darkened, and all she is a blue nitro! And so they basically are like, okay, come on, Zebra, you know, we've got to actually repeat that wall painting and make sure you do a full revolution and land on your feet this time. All right, let's do it. And look, his ball's getting bigger.
Complete with the sound effects of Biom, Biom.
The Monkey King's, like, just getting really super muscular. The power he was suppressing is welling up. We've got to hurry. Yeah, if you've got 10 seconds, let us have this dance. Come on, Monkey King. Ring your balls and twinkle your toes. We're gonna do the monkey dance with you.
Bravo for you being able to find and throw that much enthusiasm into the podcast.
I thought
at this
called
point.
For it.
Bravo, sir.
It was one of those stupid fucking lines you had to do with enthusiasm.
Chunky like a monkey.
Oh, yeah. I actually really like this chapter.
Really? It's been a while since you've liked Toriko chapter.
Yeah, I thought it was just like, it's not just, you know, stupid. See if we're getting stronger, stuff like that. The revelation that Kaka has got this ulterior motive has been duping them this whole time just to try and discover the method of obtaining pair. Why do you have to fucking play with the dog right now? Just to discover this ulterior motive is, I thought, really good. And the fact that they've caught onto it and they're like, okay, we've got to do this really fast before, you know, she gets inside the hair dome. Yeah, it's good stuff. And it actually, for once, feels like tension as opposed to, oh, are they going to survive? Yes. So yeah, I liked it.
Very good, then. World Trigger, Nick. It's just one more. We just power through one more.
Yeah. World Trigger, Chapter 93. Ko Murakami. Murakami is the guy who caused
Arafune
to stop being an attacker. He's shown up in the sparring area, and everyone exchanges introductions, basically. And so he says that he's there in order to see Yuma because, you know, he's a rookie. He managed to defeat Arafune, and he, you know, he's like, all right, I wanted to see the team whose strategy forced him to draw, you know, Kugetsu. So he's like, hey, oh, Midori Kara, help me practice. No. I don't want to lose any more points. No. So basically he's like, oh, yeah, this guy might actually be very formidable. So Yuma's like, well, you know, you could fight me. That would be the fastest way to measure your opponent, right? So, yeah, go ahead and fight me. He's like, well, Yeah, I'd like to. I was like, Kyuga, you really don't want to do this. You seriously don't want to do this. And he was like, no, I want to fight him. I want to understand what I'm up against. You know, you everyone's saying that, you know, he's... I know you guys aren't lying about how great he is, but it just makes me curious. I want to know what this guy's got. So, yeah, he's like, all right, yeah, let's do this. But I have two conditions. One, we have a 10-round match. And two, we take a 15-minute break after 5 rounds. Still okay with that? Yeah, let's do it. So they start to have a 10-round match. But we cut away then to Chika and... I always get this guy mixed up with the other one. Is it Karasuma?
No, it's the other one. Renji.
Renji, yeah. Reiji.
Reiji, sorry.
So, in a very odd question, Chika says, have you always worked out? You've got big muscles. You're large.
You're hot. You're a scruffy hottie.
You are making me experience my sexual licking. Okay. Chika, be quiet.
What was his title then? Like, Scruffy or...
Scruffy Hottie.
No, that was Karasumi. He's what?
Something Beefcake.
Yeah, something Sexy Beefcake.
Not sexy, but...
Yeah. Wasn't that on the news.
Reiji says, yeah, it's something that I learned from my old man. When you need to save someone, your greatest asset is your own body. Your body has to first and foremost be able to do what you need it to. And then your wits and technique will build upon that. So, what was your dad like? Oh, he was a search and rescue worker, an elite fireman. He never took a day off from working out, and I used to go jogging with him. But he died 9 years ago, huddled over a small child with wounds to his chest. And Chika says, so was it a neighbor attack? Well, no one really knows, because, you know, no one knew about the neighbors at the time. And the kid was too young to be a reliable witness, so... But I can imagine that he would die trying to save a kid from a neighbor attack. And so Chika says, well, he must have been a great rescue worker. Well, no, since he died. He always used to say, if you can't come back alive, you failed as a rescue worker. And he would never shut up about that. And I agree with him, because if he had lived, he could have saved a lot of people, especially in the first wave of the neighbor invasion. So, this is really fucking like... That's really sad, man. Jesus, didn't expect Reiji to get super character development all of a sudden.
It's character development that's going to rub off on her, though.
Yeah. So, yeah, just like by telling me the story, of course, you know, it's having an effect on her. And Reiji says, I work out so that I'll come back alive at the end of this. And I'm training you so that you will survive too. So never forget that. And she says, I won't. And they're like, yeah, now eat your food. Then back in the sparring area, they're doing their 15-minute break. And Yuma is winning by kind of 4-1. And so he's like, oh, yeah, he doesn't know how I move, so he's actually a lot easier to take on than Arafune. So I was like, hey, you know, if he can hold his own against the top attackers, then I can just form my next strategy around Kuga then. And Yosuke kind of leans over and is like, you're thinking that you're going to be fine, right? Right, glasses boy? This is where Ko gets really scary. Then we're introduced to Yuko Kumagai, who is a member of the third squad that Yuma and company are going to be up against. And she's bending over to get something out of a vending machine when Jin gives her a nice smack on the ass.
It's been a while since we've seen a nice firm smack on the ass in Jump. It's world cross managed.
I don't remember this ever happening.
Cross managed left a big void of firm buttockses in Jump, and I'm glad to see that World Trigger is picking up where it left off.
It's like, Jen, you know, I was like, I like you, man, but I don't know if I wanted to see this side of you, dude.
She's like, I can see into the future and know I'm going to be slapped, but feeling that...
Not slapped, punched.
Yeah, but feeling that sweet can is so worth it. She's like, I think cans mean breasts.
It's
like,
even
creepier
than what he says after that, because, you know, you don't even see the punch. You just see, you know, one panel, smack, next panel... lying on the ground, cheeks smoldering, and he just goes, you always have such a healthy punch. Okay, don't say that. That's even creepier, dude.
I wish I could turn you to 8 years old and watch you mature into a beautiful woman. Like, wow. Holy shit, that's the creepiest.
Kumagai says, if you don't stop doing that, I'm going to report you. Ha ha. I'll lighten up. I'll give you a tip as an apology. In the solo rank war booths, your next 2 points are having a 10-round match, but you better hurry, because it's going to be over soon. And so she is intrigued by this, and at that moment, Yuma's getting his throat stabbed, and it's the end of the 10-round match, and Murakami has won all 5 of the final 5 rounds. Just fucking stomped Yuma in the last 5 matches. And we're introduced to how he did this. Human brains organize and internalize information they've learned while they're asleep. My brain takes that function to the extreme. Enhanced sleep learning. That is my side effect. So, yeah. Kind of badass.
Weird point, but apparently in the chat we're being told that volumes have revealed that Jin used the side effect to choose girls to grope based on who are the least likely to hit him. So that is an awful, awful character trait to have.
But he specifically... they didn't know he would be punched.
Yeah.
That is, yeah, very creepy behavior. That's like, I have to... using your power to determine which person you'll get in least trouble for sexually... Ugh. I don't know if I like you anymore, dude.
It's kind of fucked up. It's one of those, like, supplementing material things. You're just like, maybe you should leave that out. Mm. These charming, like...
No, sexual harassment is fun, guys.
The charming perversion of these jump characters is suddenly losing a lot of the charm.
Okay, by comparison, getting girls to dress in cheerleading outfits, way less creepy.
That's what kids do. Like, that I can even, like, almost get behind. I'm like, well, kids, boys will be boys, you know? It's like they're actually slapping them on the ass, you know?
Ugh. And on that note, we're closing down for the week.
Oh, man. Actually, closed jump. That's weird. I feel like it was supposed to meant to be open forever.
Right. Anyway. Yeah. Thank you for joining us, everyone, for the live recording, which we do on twitch.tv/RoloT, Wednesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, though sometimes we do need to change it up, so be sure to follow us for updates on Twitter. He's at RoloT. I'm at YRulerOfTime. We'll tweet you when we're about to start the show. Also, be sure to send us your criticism, questions, and suggestions for future manga for us to read in the comments section, or email them to us at weeklymangarecap@yahoo.com. Special thanks go out to Steve Mann or Tyler Karras. You can check out his work at neuroticfanboy.deviantart.com, idrawboobs.tumblr.com, and on his Patreon, patreon.com/stevemann. Additionally, special thanks go out to The Infamous Planet. You can check out all the visual editions of Weekly Manga Recap on his YouTube account, youtube.com/user/TheInfamousPlanet. And he has decided to catch up, and stuff is coming out really quickly after the audio version is out, so be sure to check out his YouTube. Next week we'll have M0.
Yes. Oh, and quick shout outs to Stars Are Bright, Isaac16, and the Dr. 14 for giving us some reviews on iTunes. It's greatly appreciated, and I thank you all very kindly for it.
Be sure to check us out on iTunes so we can beat those woodworking assholes. And check out all of the past episodes of Weekly Manga Recap on weeklymangarecap.podbeam.com.
Yes. That's it. So, any wacky topic, Nick, to end out on? Or just, like, immediately just, like, run?
I don't feel like running. It's hard.
I think next week, Nick, we should come in because we'll probably have MXO. And we're still going to have, like, 13 series to talk about.
Right.
So I feel like we should do...
We should just, like, start talking about it and then start recording?
Or what we could do, we start the podcast, where we're doing, like, our intro, and we're like, alright, MXO. And then, like, out of the sudden, one of us just, like, bail. And the other one's like, bail. And then we just leave. But, like, we keep the mics on so you can hear us leaving the room. And then it's just dead silence for 4 hours.
That'd be the longest episode ever.
That's how we get out of the longest episode ever issue that's coming up here. But holy shit, we need to stop because it's over 2 hours already. Bye, guys.